Okay, so I didn't really have time to prepare today's talk, and then I had even less time. So I can talk, and will, but it may be a little incoherent. And I see that while a long abstract scared away a lot of people, a short abstract scared away even more.
There's memory of the previous abstract.
Yeah, they weren't fooled by the short abstract. Okay.
Actually, there was a journal club at 3 today, so it's possible that...
Did you go? Okay.
I went, but I failed up early.
Yeah. Is that their usual time?
Yeah, that's not the usual time.
Okay.
Big advertised talk on Wednesday.
Gotcha. Right. Okay. So I want to I want to set up these Fafians a little better than I did before. So So, example one, which we had last time, of a Fafian-Calabi-Yau variety, is actually a complete intersection of codimension 3. And the way that went is, I had three homogeneous polynomials, finding my Calabi-Yau variety. So that's locuses to be taken inside some toric variety. So that's going to be Cn mod some appropriate group. And typically it's some U1 to the k. Now let's see. I'm doing codimension 3, so I better have a sixfold. So this better be n minus 6. So that's a typical way of getting a Calabi-Yau variety, where the degree f plus degree g, I can't just add them. I should say the divisor class of f plus the divisor class of g plus the divisor class of h, which label multi-degrees in this context, is minus the canonical bundle. Let me call this ambient space x. Is minus the canonical bundle of x. So typical example is P6, and in P6 you've got a canonical class of dimension 7, and so you take three divisors which add up to O of 7, and that gives you a way to get a Calabi-Yau that has codimension 3. So I think I described last time how to think about the structure sheaf of this Y. This is Y. How to think about the structure sheaf of this Y. So it would be generated by regular functions on X, and then, of course, the kernel of this is the ideal of X, and that ideal has three generators labeled by F, G, and H. I think last time they weren't capitalized. And so the bundles not enough room. The bundles are Ox of minus df plus Ox minus dg plus Ox minus dh. Those are just shorthand for the degrees. And then there are relations among f, g, and h. So that's a matrix which I kind of messed up last time, but I think I can get right this time. So it's h minus g. No. F, g, h. G minus F still wrong. F G H G F. F.
Use the 1s, 2s, and 3s, I could tell you the answer from last time.
Pardon?
If you use the 1s, 2s, and 3s, I could tell you the answer from last time.
I think it's this. Is that right?
Actually, I might help. No, if you wrote the next thing, might help me.
G and H have to be integers.
So I need F, G, H. And the first one I want is 0, so it'd be better be H and G. Yes? And then, so this had better be F. All right, there we go. And just for fun, let's do it like that. So this first one, sorry.
Wait, you can't flip the sign, right?
Pardon?
I mean, because you fix everything.
Thank you, thank you. Here, let me flip that sign. There's a reason, okay, that you'll see in a second, that I really want F, G, and H there. So let's see. So this map is, so this is like, this goes from the, I got to get the degrees right. So this is, the middle one is minus, no. It's minus dg minus dh plus minus df minus dh plus minus d f minus dg, and then this map goes like fgh from O of minus D, F minus DG minus DH. Okay, sorry. So the, anyway, the condition here is that we want the Pfaffian to vanish, and all the Pfaffians to vanish, right? So those are square roots of the determinants of the 2 by 2 minors, and each of those 2 by 2 minors has a determinant like F squared, G squared, or H squared. So I get back to the ideal generated by F, G, and H that I had started with. So the Pfaffian ideal of this guy is exactly the ideal generated by F, G, and H that I started out with. You know, I have to apologize because I'm not starting at the beginning, and it's going to be very incoherent today, and you're jet-lagged, so.
Well, I took a look at your notes, so
okay.
I'm a little bit aware of it. So.
Okay. Okay, so as a complete intersection, how would we have written down a gauge linear sigma model which describes this guy? Well, we would have promoted the axis to chiral fields phi, which are charged in some way according to the charges that are used to produce this toric variety. So I'm going to be a little less than explicit about their charges for a moment. And then I would have had a superpotential in which I put in variables which, ever since Witten's paper, have been called P1, P2, and P3, associated to these three equations. And we have to adjust the multi-degree of P1, P2, and P3 in an appropriate way. So the way we do it is the degree of P1, well, the degree of P1 had better be minus the degree of G minus the degree of H. Sorry. It's just minus the degree of F. The degree of P2 is minus the degree of G, and the degree of P3 is minus the degree of H. And we go through the usual story that I kind of did for a hypersurface last time, where in the correct regime of the D-term equations, you end up focusing on the Calabi-Yau variety, and then the F-term equations, well, you've got partials with respect to P1, P2, P3, giving you F, G, and H as equations. And then you've got partials with respect to the phis, giving you things like P1 partial F with respect to phi J, plus similar expressions for the G and the H, equal to zero. And you'd have to do a little bit of mathematical work that's kind of equivalent to that transversality argument in one case to conclude that that all the p's actually have to vanish in this case as well. So it's that little mathematical step which is going to be replaced by in this alternate GLSM based on the Pfaffian construction, is going to be replaced by low energy behavior of the SU2 theory. So this is a case, so here, by saying that these are the degrees, I'm effectively, and saying that the degrees of the phi i's sort of corresponded to building X, right? That is the abelian GLSM, which produces this particular Calabi-Yau. Now I want to write down a non-abelian GLSM, which produces this particular Calabi-Yau, and which is based on the Horry-Tang analysis of these kind of Pfaffian varieties. So how does that go? So the non-abelian GLSM is going to have a gauge group which is either SU2 cross U1 to the n minus 6 or U2 cross U1 to the n minus 7. And in general, our construction for one of these non-abelian GLSMs with that gauge group is going to involve taking a vector bundle, which I'll write as a sum of line bundles, twisting that vector bundle by an appropriate degree. Well, I'm tensoring it with some other line bundle, and then imposing a skew symmetric map here. So this is going to be an A, which is skew symmetric. It'll have entries Aij, and they'll each have a degree. And you can see from this description what the degree is. Actually, another way of thinking of this is that we're doing wedge 2 of L1 direct sum up and so on, twisted by T. So the total degree of the Aij entry looks like the degree of Li plus the degree of Lj plus T. Okay, so here I have my bundles. I'm going to call them LF, LG, and LH. LF is O of minus DF, etc., right, for LF, LG, and LH. And how do I describe this in the same way? Well, this is LF twisted by minus DF. I had this. Sorry, these are inverse. So this looks like LF inverse tensored with O of minus DF minus DG minus DH. And similarly for these guys, which puts the maps, the Aijs, so the Aij is a section of L, or AFG, for example, is a section of LF tensor LG tensor, this guy, O of minus DF minus DG minus DH. Sorry, that was minus T, this is plus T, that's supposed to be DF, DG, DH. These are minuses, so that's a section of L, that's a section of O of DH, which is also known as LH inverse. So, and indeed, the FG entry is the thing I called H. Which is the is what multiplies O of, you know, I've just got it. Great. Which is what multiplies O of minus DH to OX exactly. Right. So it is a section of the right thing. Except here it should be LH instead of LH inverse. So I messed up my sign convention somehow. Are you anywhere with me? No.
Oh, no, I was just saying that if you'd used F1, F2, F3,
that would
have been more.
Yeah. That would have been nice. I should have done that. Can't you count starting with F? FGH, no problem. So the difference in GLSMs is that I now want to introduce, instead of this P1, P2, P3, I'm going to introduce some new guys, QI alpha. And this is alpha equal 1, 2. And that transforms in the two-dimensional representation tensored with an appropriate line bundle, LI. Maybe it'll be called MI, since we've got too many L's in the board. Some line bundle MI. And then, of course, I ranges over, right, I is in the set FGH. Yeah, this index notation is really bad. Maybe I should use capital I for FGH, huh?
What's the one through N?
Pardon?
What's going to be 1 through N?
Okay, so here I'm going to have Q2, Q3, epsilon alpha beta times F. So of course, 2 and 3 mean G and H. Times F of phi 1 through phi n. And the reason that's the right thing to do is that the GH entry of the matrix, GH entry of the matrix, is F. Then I've got an epsilon alpha beta QF QH, and that should have coefficient G. And similarly for the third term. So, and now I have to choose the bundle so that the whole thing is gauge invariant in some appropriate sense. So, you know, the degree of F has to be written as a sum of two other things, weighted by something or other, and roughly speaking, the degree of Q, well, the degree of QF, I mean, see, that wasn't the notation I was using in my notes, but I thought it was a better one, so, which was obviously wrong. The degree of QF, well, first of all, it should have had this, right, it's got a 2, so I don't quite know what I mean by degree, but I'm talking about its class as a representation. So it's 2. And then I have to tell a degree in a U1, so that should be F plus degree F plus minus degree F minus degree G minus degree H divided by 2. So I need that because I'm having to take something like a square root of the correction term. And that square root of the correction term should be used in each of these degrees so that this term has the correct degree when all is said and done. Now, that only works if the sum of the degrees is even. So if the sum of the degrees is odd instead, so when the sum of the degrees is even, I've actually formulated it with SU2. But if the sum of the degrees is odd, I should formulate it with U2, because in that case, when I take this sort of anti-symmetric trace in the SU2, I get an extra factor of the determinant. So I'll be, you know, the product of the 2 degrees, the sum of the 2 degrees plus 1, and that'll let me sort of fix up the fudge factor of dfd plus dg plus dh if the parity is wrong. So there's sort of two cases. This is the SU2 case, and or it's sort of this minus df minus dg minus dh minus 1 over 2 in the U2 case. So you have to choose the correct global structure of the group to match the data that you're trying to model with the GLSM. So one thing that would be great to understand, which I don't understand in detail, is why the Hori-Tang argument applied to this guy. So the difference from last week is that I've now sort of corrected where the letters go. So Hori and Tong have their P's where I've got phi's here, and they had phi's where I now have Q's. And my point is that the Q's are just like quadratic versions of the of Witten's P's, and the phi's are the natural fields that sweep out the toric variety, so they should have been phi's to begin with. It turns out that for the Hori-Tang example, the F, the G, and the H, actually, there's more than just three. It was all the anti-symmetric coefficients. They were all linear in phi, and from the perspective of the Grassmannian model, which was at the other side, it was reasonable to call them P's. But from the perspective of trying to build a nonlinear GLSM and use their low-energy field theory analysis to do the to calculate the vacua, it's better to call them phi's because it's more analogous to the original one. And so we see that the models are really of exactly the same structure. There should be some argument which kind of goes like, in some regime, I can break the SU2 to a U1 or something like that, and then all that's left of this is the degree. Well, I can get rid of the SU2 part, or I can break the U2 to a U1, I guess is what I'm trying to say. All that would be left is the degree, and the degrees of P1, P2, and P3 are exactly the residual degrees of these quadratic expressions in that context. But I don't quite know how to make that argument. Do you know how to make that argument?
I thought the SU2 wasn't getting broken,
Well, so their argument is to sort of directly use the SU2 in any of these cases. What I'm sort of asserting is that it should be equivalent in this case where it's exactly a 3 by 3 matrix. It should be somehow equivalent to the abelian GLSM description. And so there should be some way of kind of replacing. Yeah, it may be that these are simply two equivalent models and that there's some.
Do they just have the same infrared?
They have the same infrared fixed points, yeah. That could be. But they have an extremely similar structure.
So if you break the SU2, is that kind of a Landau-Ginzburg
form? Right, so let me give a little bit of the background for people who weren't here last week. So this kind of model can be written in general when you have these skew symmetric matrices of odd rank. And the Calabi-Yau is defined by the vanishing of all of their Fafians, right? So the D-term analysis goes exactly the same as before, and in particular, their in cases where there's just a single U1 floating around, they're kind of there's the R positive and R negative ends of the picture, and the end of the picture that I'm interested in at the moment is the one where I end up with a toric ambient space, and then through this low energy field theory analysis, I decide, or Hori and Tong decide, that the set of vacua naturally lives on this Fathian locus. However, there's also the other end of the picture, so the sort of opposite D-term end. And there you get something different. So in the original example that they were analyzing, in that case you actually get a linear section of a Grassmannian on the other side. It's not a Landau-Ginzburg theory. And I mean, the question of exactly what you're going to get for a construction like this, say, built inside of a toric, a weighted projective space, for example, that's an easy way to get a single U1 in the picture. What you'll get on the other side of this is still an open question. I mean, so Hintaro and I have been working out some cases of this, and we kind of know in some cases what it does, but generally I don't quite know how to address it. It's very case by case what we did.
But this construction is very similar, like this Gaussian sigma models with boundaries. I mean, it seems that you're just looking at a very specific complex which gives you the Fathian, but isn't there a similar philosophy that you take a look at these complexes and then, well, it's a little different because you have the boundary, I guess.
That's right. So, I mean, this is a resolution of the structure sheaf of the Calabi-Yau itself, right? And in this case, it's no big deal. I've just written a Kozul complex for a complete intersection Calabi-Yau. But one of the things which makes this method pretty powerful and potentially extremely, extremely powerful is that it can be used to handle cases where the Calabi-Yau itself is not a complete intersection. So there are various theorems that hold in, well, codimension 3 in projective space, but presumably there are versions of these theorems which hold in codimension 3 for other toric varieties. Well, the codimension 2 theorems, codimension 1 tells you that it's a hypersurface. A hypersurface has a single equation. Codimension 2, typically the result says that even though it's codimension 2, it's still a complete intersection. In codimension 3, it has to be one of these Fathian varieties in general. So, this is a potentially universal way of describing codimension 3 Calabi-Yau varieties. There, for codimension 4, codimension 5, and so on, less is known about the algebra, but there hopefully will be GLSMs with other non-abelian factors in their gauge group, which lead to those results.
But wouldn't that just extend the length of this complex if you go to higher codimension in some sense?
Well, if I'm doing, if I have a complete intersection and I do go to higher codimension, yes, it just extends the length of the complex. But
that doesn't guarantee you can access all Calabi-Yau. Is that clear?
That's right. So this is just a very specific example of one which can be accessed by a Fathian. But other ones typically have larger Fathian matrices, so more equations, and that's why they're not complete intersections anymore. They're still codimension 3, but they have a huge number of equations.
Yeah, but in this Hori page helps paper, for instance.
Yes.
I mean, isn't there a similar problem if you want to describe all coherent sheaf space plates, and then, I mean, you allow for all kinds of complexes? I mean, I know that it's slightly a different situation because you consider boundary gauge linear sigma model.
I thought that was for building bundles, though, not for building the spaces.
Yeah, but I mean, you're building in some sense, if you want to describe frames, all kinds of submanifolds, Calabi-Yaus. So that's, I think, a very similar problem then. I guess you want more there because you want all coherent sheaves of these Calabi-Yaus in some sense.
That's right. So here I have to resort to a sort of tricky commutative algebra construction just to describe the structure sheaf, which is not the case in the usual ones that we talk about, right? But I completely agree with you that once I've got the description of the structure sheaf, I should start asking about descriptions of other elements of the derived category so that I could do open strings as well as closed strings in spaces like this.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that if you have the whole derived category in some sense, then the color of yours is just some sense just a subset, right?
The whole derived category of what?
Yeah, of what, okay.
Right.
I think also in Herb's Tory, it's very important that they're doing this with Valerie.
Herb's Tory page. Herb's Tory
page. Sorry. Yeah, it's very important that they're doing.
Even though he's a banker now.
Because
I said, even though he's a banker now. Page left physics, but we should still remember him in the paper.
In memoriam. Anyway, like you can't use their construction to build, for example, all of these nice bundles for like hadronic compactifications. Like it's very important that you have these boundary terms that you can use to construct these sequences. I don't think anyone knows how to do it if you just have boundary free.
Yeah, but I mean, you can describe any, well, given a color of Yao, you can describe the principle and object of the derived category.
I don't think so, not for hadronic.
In principle, I have to agree with you.
I mean, in practice, you might not know how the complex looks like and so on.
Right. Right. I mean, any bundle can be built as, in terms of it has some nice resolution like this, right? And so, even any bundle you would want to use for hadronic theory. It's just that we don't actually have ways of practically writing down what all the bundles are.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. Because in the GLSM with boundary, we more or less know how to do it because of the Herb's Tory page.
Well, we only know very specific ones.
Well, I don't think there's anyway, like, very general ones.
I mean, let me just point out that even vector bundles on projective space is a sort of wide open topic, right? I mean, so if you really wanted to have a description of all vector bundles on projective space, you'd be very hard pressed to do it. And you could always restrict the bundle on projective space to a Calabi-Yau. Should we believe that it gets simpler when restricted to the Calabi-Yau? Probably not. So, you know, the Horrocks-Mumford bundle in P5 when restricted to a Calabi-Yau threefold of codimension 2 should be some interesting bundle on a Calabi-Yau threefold. Not one that's going to be easily described in terms of the toric structure on the P5. Therefore, not one that's going to be easily included in the GLSM. That goes against my optimistic philosophy of last week. So I guess if I were being really optimistic, I would say that not only could you get all Calabi-Yaus, but you could get all Calabi-Yaus sufficiently, you know, with all of the all Calabi-Yaus with bundles sufficiently toricified in an appropriate GLSM that you would have everything. Right? That would be the very optimistic point of view. All right, what else was I going to say today? I don't really know. Guess what? I may be quitting early. So I started to... I don't know. Let's just have a discussion. Sorry. A little lame. I probably should have canceled it, but we're not meeting either of the next 2 weeks, and so I didn't want there to be that much of a gap. Yeah, I mean, so the general construction is... right, that you had some bundle, and maybe the matrix A was a section of wedge 2 of the bundle tensored with some other line bundle. This thing I'm calling O of T, something like that. And it's supposed to be skew symmetric. Aji is A minus Aij. And well if the bundle has been written as a direct sum of line bundles, which is the natural thing to do in the toric context, then I get all these matrix entries which have various degrees, and I can sort of pull the same trick I was pulling here of defining a queue which has whose degree is one of the degrees of the line bundles in question, shifted by something like half of the sum of all of them. But whether you can do that literally or not depends on whether the guy is divisible by two, and that depends on, I mean, which one, sorry. Depending on the example, I may want to use SU2 or U2 in order to make that part work.
Sorry, I think I missed that. So what is the difference between the two cases? Can that just reduce U2 to SU2 times AU1?
That's true locally, but not globally.
Okay.
And that can affect the representation theory just slightly. The issue is, the real question is, does the square root of the determinant exist as a representation or not? Right? And if you need the square root of the determinant, you better replace U2 by SU2 cross U1. Because, the map from this has a Z2 kernel, right? Because you can send minus 1, minus, this minus 1 goes to minus 1, minus, no, that's not the way I want to say it. Anyway, you better use this one if you want something like square root of determinant. Right, so I guess I could formulate it always with an SU2 cross U1 and then observe that sometimes it was trivial under the Z2 action and therefore actually looked like a U2. So I have a couple questions, which maybe you guys who are reading the paper know the answer to. So if I do it this way in complete generality, then I have to deal with a bunch of representations which aren't just the fundamental, but are the fundamental twisted with some power of the determinant. Maybe it's always the same power, or maybe I'm going to allow different powers, and I might allow a one-half fractional power as well. And the question is, does that affect this low-energy analysis at all? You know, when I read through it, at least the first part of the analysis, it didn't seem to affect, right? You would get, in your D terms, the only effect of that is that your phi dagger phi in the D term, actually, I think I mean Q dagger Q, since I've used that notation. The Q dagger Q in the D term would get some coefficient that was depending on this determinant, right? And that's, it looks like, look to me like that was the only place in the bosonic potential where there was any effect of this change. But I might have missed something.
It doesn't seem like it affects it.
Yeah. Because that U1 gets Higgs anyway, right? And so then you're the low energy analysis, by which you mean the SU2 with three flavors versus SU2 with one flavor analysis?
I guess that's right. I guess that U1 goes away.
So it probably doesn't make a difference.
At least as long as you're not. No, that's right. Yeah.
So when I have these massive ones, well, by the time I'm even looking at the massive flavors, the U1 is gone, right? So
so I don't really care. Okay. Okay, so the construction will work?
Yeah,
in principle.
I mean, it changes like your axial anomaly and things like that.
Right. And so in principle, we'll get an analog of that equation, except instead of F, G, and H, it'll have some nice, you know, IJ and anti-symmetry indices. I was going to work out the R-symmetry issues, but I didn't do it.
I still don't really understand how correct the counting of the Witten index is. But it seems like they do countings in various regimes and then claim that the results are exactly correct, but I haven't really understood why they are.
You haven't understood why it doesn't change from regime to regime? Or you haven't understood why...
Like, for example, they compute for large maps of sigma. They can talk about what the supersymmetric vacua are.
Mm-hmm.
But then, didn't really... Well, if they said something, I don't remember what they said about what happens when those of sigma are large, for example.
But it's an index. Shouldn't it be? It's an index.
See, I have a question.
We're looking around in field space, so it's not exactly.
I see.
It's not like tuning an M, right? Like, okay, if we're tuning, if it's a question about tuning M, as long as M is not going to zero or infinity, then I agree. It's an index, but yeah, for sigma, this is looking around in field space for the vacuum. So I just don't know, like in the region where sigma is small, like how to be sure that there aren't vacua lurking around there.
Well, let's see. I mean, part of the story should be the D term story, right? That which ranges of sigmas are permitted changes depending like on whether R is positive or negative.
Mm-hmm.
You got a question?
Yeah, it was just a related question. So because I don't understand why in order to compute the Witten index you can add twisted masses because it changes the nature of the function. And computing the index of M not equal to 0, taking M versus 0 seems incorrect. Changing the nature of the
pleasure at
infinity.
But
I don't even know why this procedure works.
Because otherwise, it's, as you mentioned, it's infinity minus infinity.
That's because I'm doing it in the most stupid way. There might be a better way of doing it.
I mean, like I was doing, you know, in my class, I've been doing principal values for them, right? It's great. Log R minus log R equals zero. No problem.
You sound like a physicist.
I have a...
It's harder to teach math like a physicist than it is, for me, than it is to teach physics like a physicist. When I taught freshman physics, that was not a big deal. But here, you know, to not fall back on my epsilons and deltas is a challenge.
So at some point they have this offhand comment about, recall for the for a UK
Where are you?
Oh, just at the beginning of section 3.
Okay.
Well, it's not that exciting, but they just say that basically the Witten index has been counted for UK gauge groups with n fundamentals.
Okay.
And then there's no reference. I was wondering if you know a reference.
No.
I might find that helpful.
I've tried looking for it. I've tried looking really hard, but I haven't been able to find it.
Recall.
No, it's not. The name is not there, for sure. Yeah, the appendix in this paper for vector structures or something. The paper has nothing to do with written index at all, but there's an appendix.
But the SU must be known or something.
There's not a paper by Florian Tom on that.
This is the paper for Florian Tom. I think this is their only joint paper. I could be wrong. It's.
No, they do vice versa. They do SUK, but not UK. But I wanted to read the UK in hopes that I might understand that one better.
Okay, on page 2, Josh, although the Witten index, ref 4, for UK theories in two dimensions is easy to compute. Oh, maybe that's just Witten.
That's Witten, yes.
I see. They're saying it's easy to compute.
By the way, Witten doesn't say that in his paper.
He doesn't say it's easy to compute?
No. It's a wrong reference. I'm not sure what paper it is that says it's easy to compute.
It might be worth looking at other papers at Tong, however.
Yeah. It usually writes pretty clearly.
Richard, in this Hori Tong paper, there's a promise of another Hori Tong paper. And, at the risk of getting asked, where is Non-Spherical Horizons 2, I do ask Kentaro that question once in a while. What happened to Hori Tong 2?
Is it a draft of 150
pages? Pardon? I get no response other than where are Non-Spherical Horizons 2? It's just a parody, right? That one I have an answer for. It was a mistake to call it part 1. You should never call something part 1. That's...
So do you know any references where, which might have a compendium of formulae on Witten indices for various theories?
No.
Because in 2D, it's kind of tricky. It's trickier compared to the 4D case. 2D to come up with.
Oh, look, they even have a title for it. Right. K. Hori and D. Tong, summing the non-abelian instantons. Parenthesis, tentative title. Close parenthesis. To appear. It's a great title.
You appreciate the homage.
Is it known how to construct mirrors of these problems?
No. However, the mirrors are known in some cases, and they're known through indirect methods, basically. So, so Rodland, who wrote down the first one of these things, said, "Motivated by Green-Plesser, let me do an orbifold construction for a mirror," and he got a reasonable answer. So, you can do orbifold constructions for mirrors in all of the known cases with a single U1. And you get a reasonable looking answer. And this guy, Kanazawa, last spring, wrote a paper in which he essentially computed all sorts of closed string instanton expansions under the assumption that the mirror was this orbifold thing.
Yeah, I was about to ask. And is it really proven that these are mirror pairs, or is it more or less assumed?
Well,
I mean, you can ask that question about many mirror constructions, and particularly since you said really proven, you might get a whole lecture from me on the subject.
Well, is there an independent check on the numbers they get?
Yeah. So Rodlin compared leading terms in an instanton expansion, which helped convince him that he had the mirror, and Kanazawa does some checks of a similar nature. So there are calculations of instanton counts of low degree which agree with the first few terms in the series. Is that enough to convince everybody that it's in there?
It's true for me.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, so the first few numbers, the degree one numbers, match.
I don't remember, without looking up this paper right now, I don't remember exactly how far he went, but yeah. Degree one numbers are not always convincing because there could be some normalization that took care of those, right? Although, if the assumption about the degree one numbers led to all integers for Gromov-Witten invariance, that in itself is an indication that you've got the right normalization, right?
Well, but often the Gromov-Witten invariants, you can also divide them all by a factor of four.
Right. So that's right. That's right.
You can divide any invariant by a factor of anything.
And still get an integer, he meant.
I probably asked this last week, but are there speculations, including wild speculations, about how to write down Calabi-Yau's in higher codimension, besides the Fathian and complete intersection constructions?
Here's my flip answer, non-abelian GLSM.
Okay.
But a better answer is, and I know I answered this last week because I regretted speaking it into the microphone.
Yeah.
Well,
that part of the answer.
Right. So that's like codimension 4.
Okay.
So for codimension 4, there's some commutative algebra constructions. And what I don't know, partly because I haven't seen them yet, haven't seen the literature on these yet, is can we guess what the GLSM counterpart to those constructions is? I'm hoping to see those soon. Then we can think about them.
So then is one hope that if one can understand the non-abelian GLSMs that have infrared fixed points, one can perhaps learn something about how to construct these different types of Calabi-Yau's geometrically.
Right. I mean, the most optimistic hope goes something like this: given any Calabi-Yau manifold in a toric variety, its ideal sheaf has a resolution with some structure. That structure lets you write down a non-abelian GLSM, which realizes the Calabi-Yau, and when you look at the infrared behavior of that field theory, you see the Calabi-Yau re-emerging according to the structure that the commutative algebra had. And there will be many types of Calabi-Yaus that you get this way, because there are many types of groups and representations that might occur. And, you know, the very optimistic point of view goes on to say, and moreover, there will be a non-abelian GLSM mirror construction, which will tell you what the mirror is, and it'll be built in a similar way, and you can figure out the mirror and make all the calculations in the world. And
somehow the use of the gauge group seems very different between the Fathian example and the ordinary abelian GLSMs, where the gauge group in those cases have to do with the ambient toric variety.
Well, we need, it has to do with more than the ambient toric variety. It has to do with the toric variety and the bundle, right?
Mm-hmm. And in the non-abelian.
In the abelian case.
Oh, okay.
Right? I mean, the P field, I would claim, is a bundle variable,
yeah.
And the phi fields are have to do with the toric variety.
Okay.
And so, in the non-abelian case, instead of the P field, you're having some, instead of a rank 1 bundle, you're having something like a rank 2 bundle, and you've got a SU2 acting somehow. you know, you could ask whether these things ought to mix, and maybe I'm not really sure what to expect for mirrors of these guys, but you could also imagine having some non-trivial part of the non-abelian group showing up in the phi fields, right? So that you ended up with a and they might not even be phi fields. Pardon?
This is your phi fields or Horiton phi fields?
I'm not sure. Well, in my phi fields is all just abelian, right? The way I wrote it down, I've got some toric variety, the phi fields are in the toric variety. But you might have made a Grassmannian type construction instead of a toric variety. And then you would have had some non-abelian group action on the phi fields as well. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Right. So I guess if I had a codimension 3 Calabi-Yau in a Grassmannian, then I might need an SU2 for the P's and another UK for the Grassmannians.
Sounds like a good starting point. Possibly.
Possibly. Well, another possible good starting point is these cases we were talking about last time where you would have some kind of meson field, right? So a UK with both fundamentals and anti-fundamentals. Because then at least you have a hope of this kind of twisted mass analysis doing something for you. Okay, I will apologize again that this wasn't a real lecture. We will have a real lecture in 3 weeks, but I don't know by whom or on what, but we will have one. And in 2 weeks, if anybody wants to come to see an advancement exam, they're welcome to come. It's public. An advancement exam in math. In some branch of algebraic geometry, which is why we're not having a seminar, because we have to give an exam. All right.